Hello. My name is Tony Reid. Welcome to JOY, a programme for LGBTI people and their friends on Coast Access Radio 104.7 FM and other access radio stations around New Zealand. Today you've just got me updating you on the situation internationally and in New Zealand for transgender rights. An awful lot has happened, and unfortunately very little of it is good news. Last year we learnt quite a bit about the Cass review and report. This was carried out by Hilary Cass and accepted by the Conservative and Labour parties. We're in the UK at the moment, where the main developments have been. This was a remarkable coup for the TERFs, or gender criticals as they prefer to be known, but let's call them TERFs, everybody knows that, as it totally shifted the balance of power in the debate on young trans people, especially in the area of puberty blockers and similar medical treatments. Doubts have been expressed about the report, especially by experts, the BMA. At the same time, the Scottish Parliament had passed a bill introducing a similar type of self-assessment to change birth certificates, as already existed in some other countries, including New Zealand. This was vetoed by the UK government and is now considered an eccentric extreme position in the UK. There has, for example, originally under the Conservatives, confirmed under Labour, a big change in the recognition of countries whose systems are trusted so they do not have to start again to gain a gender recognition certificate. Former friends are now enemies, including New Zealand. Former enemies now bizarre new friends, for example, Belarus. You'd have thought they might have noticed that. The new Labour government has seen no improvement and indeed declared puberty blockers illegal. And a report has just come out. I was reading only this morning about a report coming out saying that that has had a very bad effect amongst young trans people. A trans woman is now not a woman, according to the Labour government. 2025 was to bring major new developments across the world and great harm to trans people. So the big event again in the UK was the judgment of the UK Supreme Court. And I'll read you the AI overview on Google. The UK Supreme Court has ruled that the legal definition of woman in the Equality Act 2010 refers to biological sex assigned at birth, not gender identity or a gender recognition certificate. This decision impacts how the Equality Act's provision on sex discrimination are interpreted, particularly concerning single-sex spaces and services. While the ruling acknowledges protections for transgender individuals under the Equality Act, it clarifies that these are separate from the definition of a woman. That will probably be the last time I'm ever complimentary about AI, by the way. They also state very clearly that the concept of sex is binary. It's one of the leading statements in their judgment. They emphasise it's not a victory for one side, but the other side has still treated it as a big victory. It's not clear what protection from discrimination transgender had, transgender people still have after that. The Supreme Court, again, did not consult with experts, just like the Cass Review didn't, medical and scientific, or they would have discovered that sex is not quite as simply binary as they say. I was reading only the other day a very interesting article by an American lecturer pointing out all the complications of and what do you mean when you say sex is binary, and probably you don't mean what you think you mean. As usual, intersex people have been completely ignored. You'd think they would be a big question mark in this, but they just get completely ignored most of the time. The big question has come about single-sex spaces. And almost immediately, the Equality and Human Rights Commission in the UK, having welcomed the judgment, only 9 days later issued an interim update on practical implications. And they, of course, go much farther than the court did, or the court said it was doing. And the court, I think, was very naive to hand such a victory to the TERFs. We're now awaiting a final EHRC report after consultation, but it could simply be the original one in force with no debate. If it is like the original one, there'll be issues. There's already been pressure to conform with this. For example, the parliaments in Westminster and Scotland and the gender police are out making sure that institutions are following this as the government seems to want them to. What will be the outcome? Well, trans men might not be allowed to use men's toilets anymore, and using women's toilets would be rather out for most of the trans men I know, because their presence would be quite alarming. But there won't be pressure on them much. They'll just go. I don't think men's toilets are full of people asking for proof that you're a biological man. Closeted trans women who look very feminine will probably be reasonably safe too. But the masculine women, whether they are trans or cisgender, lesbian or straight, will be policed and accused of very quickly of breaking the law. In the meantime, J.K. Rowling is threatening to film suspects in public toilets. That will go down well, won't it? And of course, emphasises the rather surface view of who the suspects will be, if you can just tell them from a fully dressed from a film. Now for some more international developments. The US, of course, has been very extreme. It's been in the news quite a bit. Only one day after his inauguration, President Trump signed an executive order announcing two genders only exist. Trans and binary people, and of course intersex yet again being ignored, no longer legally exist at all. The scientific arguments against this are dismissed by Trump as rubbish science, which is, by the way, the same phrase he uses for climate science scientists as well. So we're in good company. Some blue states are, of course, fighting back, but Trump has been relentless in attacking those who don't do what they're told. He has a lot of power, unfortunately, especially the federal government has a lot of economic power. And so the states are supposedly politically fairly independent, but economically they are less so, even the bigger states. And there's been lots of caving in to Trump's bullying. And of course, it's not just trans. All of LGBTQ is under attack in this. There are now threats to marriage equality growing, and the comments are, of course, from the activists in our community is we knew this would happen. They always go for the weakest link, but the Republicans and their friends want an America without gay people. The opponents are homophobes who saw trans as the weak link, a small minority within a minority, easily attacked. And of course, most people don't know many, if any, trans people, and are therefore most likely to be persuaded to be scared of them. Australia. The laws in Australia are at state level, so there are variations. Although most states have adopted self-assessment, as indeed has the whole of Canada as well, of course, as New Zealand, and of course a lot of the American blue states. Australia's produced some interesting reports in that they're far more neutral than the other ones. One agrees that there is limited evidence of the long-term effects of such treatments as puberty blockers, but then admits that there's no evidence of any harm either. The TERF view ignores that element. I would have thought the withdrawal of puberty blockers and things very much more obviously has negative feedback, and even if it might be only short term, but I'm sure the evidence for that will be covered over. Anyway, essentially in Australia, it's still developing, rather like New Zealand. But before we get on to New Zealand in some more detail, recently I've picked up an interesting development at the United Nations. The TERFs are busy there too. And I'm reading from a very good article in The Advocate, which was published in the US newsletter, The Advocate. It's by Ryan Adamczewski. And heading the UN draft report uses pseudoscience to claim gender dysphoria is socially contagious. The UN's preliminary report on sex-based violence incorrectly claims trans acceptance erases the legal category of women. It says the United Nations has compiled a draft report that uses pseudoscience to wrongly claim that transgender acceptance erases the legal category of women and that gender dysphoria is somehow socially contagious. The preliminary report on sex-based violence against women and girls from the Office of the United Nations High Commissioner for Human Rights lumps in recent advancements in trans rights with actual physical and sexual violence as issues facing women and girls today, claiming that trans people deny their rightful recognition as a distinct category in law and society. Compiled by the Special Rapporteur on Violence Against Women and Girls, Reem Al-Salem, the report also highlights the supposed harmful consequences of social and medical transitioning of children. Al-Salem referred to gender dysphoria as socially contagious and recommended banning gender-affirming care for anybody under the age of 18. The Special Rapporteur's draft report perpetuates inaccurate and harmful assumptions about transgender people. Maria Sjödin, Executive Director of Outright International, told The Advocate, "Women and girls face violence, including sexual violence, intimate partner violence, and practices like female and intersex genital mutilation because of patriarchal power struggles and rigid gender norms, not because of the existence or legal recognition of trans people. Meanwhile, the rates of femicide and gender-based violence affecting trans women and girls are alarmingly high. By placing the blame for violence against women onto an already marginalised group, the Special Rapporteur lets patriarchy off the hook and ultimately undermines the safety and dignity of the very women and girls she is mandated to protect," Sjödin said. I've quoted this report partly because of that paragraph, because if you imagine that all women are on the side of the TERFs or the gender criticals, even in the UK, that is not the case, and that is even more the case in other countries. I only know one lesbian woman who's a gender critical, and I know many lesbian women who aren't, and is indeed very, very critical of them. So it's not just men, mere men like me, who can criticise this, but I know I can refer to a large number of feminist women who think the whole thing is pretty appalling. The so-called rapid onset gender dysphoria, ROGD, hypothesis that being trans is a trend has long been debunked as junk science. The entire theory is based on a single poster abstract in 2017 by Lisa Littman. Poster abstracts are often published when the material is not only too weak to be a journal article, but of insufficient quality to even be accepted for oral presentation at a conference. Littman herself has admitted this is not a formal diagnosis. A 2022 study in paediatrics found out that of 91,937 adolescents in 2017 and 105,437 in 2019, the total percentage of those who identified as trans decreased from 2.4% in 2017 to 1.6% in 2019, which would not support the social contagion hypothesis. Researchers concluded that ROGD should not be used to restrict the provision of gender-affirming medical care. And then there's a great list of American organisations mostly medical, who all agree that gender-affirming care is evidence-based and medically necessary, not just for for adults, but minors as well. And it's interesting that they comment that, meanwhile, hate crimes against trans people have increased almost 200% in the last 5 years in England and Wales, according to the UK government. And in a survey that an international organisation carries out every few years, the UK has gone from being number one in Europe for LGBT rights to number 22, which is a fairly major collapse. So what's the situation in New Zealand? The use of puberty blockers is being considered and could certainly get more restrictive. But we shouldn't forget that in the absence of New Zealand First and the last parliament, important reforms for trans people were carried overwhelmingly. Self-assessment in birth certificates was passed unanimously and had already been in place for years for passports and driver's licences, as these could be done administratively without new legislation. The banning of conversion therapy was passed with only a few national MPs dissenting. It is noticeable that even that bill was opposed by the TERFs. They really know how to make friends in the community, don't they? One big question is, how strong is that support? So often, human rights issues attract only soft support. OK, if there are no other issues, but they can easily be superseded by other issues, like coalition agreements, for example. And the big problem, of course, is Winston. Due to the rather inadequate negotiating skills of Mr. Luxon, or perhaps he doesn't really care anyway, education guidelines relating to gender and sexuality have been removed from relationship education in schools, and now it's the same as happened with sporting bodies. This is probably over the protest of the National Party ministers involved, but Winston really has the bit between his teeth now. For example, recently, MFAT has been instructed not to mention Pride Month in their messaging that they send out. And this sort of thing is pure Trump, as are Winston's occasional threats to remove funding even if he doesn't get his way, because he can't actually do it. Seeing how many years Winston has been in charge of MFAT, one wonders why he has suddenly changed on this. He hadn't cancelled mention of Pride Month before. His homophobia and transphobia have always been there. He has an appalling record, voting record in Parliament. But it's clearly getting even worse with age. New Zealand First have also produced a rather silly gender bill to define women and follow the UK Supreme Court judgment. This is not part of the coalition agreement and so far has been dismissed as irrelevant by the other government parties. In any case, it needs to be drawn from the ballot. It's not, unless the government adopted it, it's just got to wait its turn like all the other private bills. Winston has said that this bill would abolish the right for self-identification, so one would really hope that the other parties would not agree readily to reverse a reform they passed unanimously fairly recently. But again, how hard or soft is that support when a coalition partner gets pushy? So lots of questions remain. But all of this tells us that how important community solidarity and especially support for our trans siblings and friends is. They have told us so. And worldwide support is pretty solid. In the UK, Trans Pride is now a big event supported by many out gay and lesbian figures. Actor Russell Tovey, for example, regularly exclaims, "No LGB without the T," helping to ensure that the LGBs, as I call them, are firmly sidelined. Those are people who think support for transgender people should be dropped from the community's programme. If you want a good example of support for trans people by well-known members of our communities, I recommend Alan Cumming on Jimmy Kimmel recently. He gave an impassioned introductory monologue, mostly in support of transgender people and the US in particular. Anybody with the most basic knowledge of the history of the fight for LGBTQIA equality will know that trans people have always been an essential part of our community and should be supported by all of us in the current mood of hostility, whipped up by unscrupulous people who, in fact, wish harm to all of us. Certainly, this is a position which will always be upheld by this particular radio programme. So this is, of course, all still in progress, and I'm afraid you will get other updates later. Hopefully not all negative. One would not like to be a transgender person in the United States at the moment, especially if you live in a red state. But to lift our spirits a bit, I thought I would finish with a piece of music, which I've sort of had in my pending file for a little while. And seeing that part two of the movie Wicked must be coming along shortly, I've got a version of Fearo's solo Dancing Through Life. But of course, being me, I've chosen somebody different than from the movie. Isaac Cole Powell is a young gay performer that I have mentioned in the past. And this is him singing Dancing Through Life in a program, Wicked in Concert, from 2021. He's been rather unlucky, has Isaac Cole Powell. He started as a new whiz kid on Broadway, sort of getting leading role after leading role. And he was in a revival of West Side Story playing Tony, and was considered very promising for a Tony Award. And then everything, of course, closed down for COVID, and West Side Story never reopened. And since then, he hasn't been on Broadway at all. His rather promising theatre career has truly been disrupted. And I hope it can come back, because I particularly like the way he does this song, as with others I've heard. So, Dancing Through Life from Wicked by Isaac Cole Powell to close our programme.
The trouble with schools is they always try to teach the wrong lesson. Believe me, I've been kicked out of enough of them to know. They want you to become less callow, less shallow. But I say, why invite stressing? Stop studying strife and learn to live the unexamined life. Dancing through life, skimming the surface, gliding where turf is smooth. Life's more painless for the brainless. Why think too hard when it's so soothing? Dancing through life, no need to tough it when you can slough it off as I do. Nothing matters, but knowing nothing matters. It's just life, so keep dancing through. Dancing through life, swaying and sweeping and always keeping. Life is fraughtless when you're thoughtless. Those who don't try never look foolish. Dancing through life, mindless and careless. Make sure you're aware lest trouble is rife. Woes are fleeting, woes are glancing when you're dancing. Let's go down to the Oz Dust Ballroom. We'll meet there later tonight.
This program is made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.